Be part of the conversation. Send us a WhatsApp message on +27 73 470 3520 or call us at +27 12 001 7679. Let your voice be heard. Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. From broadcast to baptism.
There are weights that some people carry that no one sees. Chronic pain, constant hospitals, a body that betrays you even when your spirit rises. But then there are people who still choose to help carry others while carrying their own weight, turning their trials into compassions and their pain into purpose. Tonight's shapeshifter is one of those rare souls, Jessica Odhiambo. She is living with sickle cell disease, a condition that demands strength, resilience, and courage every single day. Yet she's not defined by it. She is defined by how she shows up, helping countless others, raising awareness, supporting those who suffer, and speaking truth where silence often wins. You are going to hear more than a story of surviving tonight. Jessica's story is one of turning vulnerability into voice, suffering into service, and trials into tears of hope for others. Tonight, we're in conversation about endurance, as well as impact, courage, and what it looks like to wear your scars with dignity, with your hands extended, helping carry burdens that aren't yours alone. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm doing quite fine. And you?
I'm doing good, thank you. Jessica, I want you to take me or me and my listeners to a time that you remember where you didn't feel any pain. Is there such a time?
Throughout my life, the times I didn't feel pain are minimal compared to the times I felt pain. Mm. The times I felt pain outweighs the moment of laughter, joy, and peace. But we thank God we're still living and taking a day at a time.
Yeah. Talk to me about you growing up. Where were you raised? How was that? Was there awareness of what you were dealing with or the condition or the disease that you had when you were young? Or was your childhood fun? Talk to me about you as a child.
So me as a child, to everyone listening, I'm born and raised in Kenya, at a place known as Migori. Mm. My father lived in Migori. It's a county in Kenya. Mm. And basically, our family originates from somewhere called Homa Bay County in Karachuonyo.
Okay.
But I was born and raised in Migori with two teachers.
Mm.
And one thing I always say to myself, one thing I've realized as I grow up or as I become older, is that I don't have memories of my childhood.
Oh.
I don't know what it was like to be a child, because I haven't figured myself out how, if I had friends, if I even played, you know. And what I can remember is me as a child from grade 5 onwards, but as young as grade 4 and below, as young as 2 years, I don't remember much. But what I know is, amidst so many children, I survived.
Mm.
And amidst being in hospital one day with children around me, it's sad to say that I survived. So as a child, I don't know so much, but I know I was a little chubby, jovial child. Through the pictures I've seen and the stories my dad sometimes say and my mom, you know, I know I was a little nice baby, but I can't remember being a child from grade five. Is that I used to go to school, but I was constantly sick and constantly in and out of hospital. But as a child, you don't know what is happening. You are not aware. You don't know why that is happening. And some things we only learn about as we grow older and become adults.
Yeah. And when was a name given to what you were feeling, to the sickness you were carrying? Because I think for a lot of us, especially in our African countries, we go through pain and we carry diseases, but it's not necessarily easily diagnosed or correctly diagnosed. So when was the first time you heard that you've got sickle cell?
This was diagnosed when I was 3 years old. And 3 years old. And one thing is that I have, it's like this had been before, but it was just like recognized, or it was found out that now it was now given, like officially given a name after so many tests. Because sometimes, most of the times, we tend to treat things that we're not so aware of, but then finally, when we consult and when we get to know better, then now we can put a name on it, and now we know how to deal with it going forward.
Yeah. And so for those who don't know what sickle cell disease is, can you shed some light on that? And we will, because I know that you're not somebody who's defined by this illness. So we'll move from the disease itself and talk about you and your conquering spirits and the amazing work that you're doing for others. But for those who don't know what this is, please enlighten us.
So basically, when you want to talk about sickle cell disease, it's a chronic disease. It's inherited. It's an inherited disorder. And when I talk about inherited disorder, a person can only get sickle cell disease if their parents are carriers meaning if two parents are carriers, then they can have a child with sickle cell disease. And what happens when a child is diagnosed with sickle cell disease, or what happens when we say that someone has sickle cell? It means that their blood cells, or their red blood cells, are sickled in shape. A normal red blood cell is like oval in shape. It's round. It's like fully round. But a sickled red blood cells, it's in the same, it's in the shape of a sickle. It resembles the half moon. So when that happens to the cells, they're not able to transport blood very well. So when this happens, it brings about so much pain to the sickle cell, to the child, or to the adult living with sickle cell. And this kind of pain could also cause things like stroke. It could, it's severe pain that maybe if not given an immediate attention, it could lead to death, you know. And some of this pain is basically called crisis, because when it comes, sometimes the hands are painful, the abdomen, the knees, like it's a pain that it's very unbearable. And sometimes when you have a small baby, and maybe you haven't diagnosed, she or he hasn't been diagnosed with sickle cell, sometimes you as a parent, you're confused. You don't know what might be happening to your baby, because maybe the limbs are swollen, the face, the legs, and they are constantly crying. It's because of the pain. So sickle cell disease can't be transmitted. It's just an inherited disorder. Sometimes you it's something that your parents also inherited, maybe from their great grandparents. Sometimes even your parents don't have sickle cell, but then maybe if they have four children, one might be a carrier, one might have sickle cells, you know. So these are things that maybe you are taught in biology, like things like AS, SS. So maybe SS, that's why we are constantly told when we are yet to get married, you test for genotype so that you know that you know your partner is which, has which genotype, so that you don't get married to someone who is a carrier and you are also a carrier. And that will give you the possibility of you guys having a child with sickle cell. So that is just a brief of what sickle cell is.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a lot. And I think, you know, with diseases like this where there's nothing you could have done, it just, you just didn't win the lottery, I guess, if there were a lottery, and if we can put it like that. And I think as somebody who has an autoimmune condition, the idea that my own immune system could be fighting against other parts of my body annoys me so much. So I can imagine you are just born into this thing and you suffer long and hard when you haven't even done anything. Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
And when did you first decide that living with sickle cell was not going to define who you are, that it wasn't just going to be a part of your life, but you could use it to purposefully impact others?
I basically decided this when I was in college. When I was in college, I started my first campaign when I was in year two, year three, like somewhere there, where we organized an event just to create awareness and to talk about sickle cell in college. But sometimes, you know, you come to a decision that this won't define me. But along the way, when you continuously interact with people, when you meet people, when you have to live your life every day, this kind of distraction, or there's a way, that kind of way people make life feels like this certainly defines you, you know. But then when I first said this won't define the person who I am, my capability and me as a human being, was when I was in college, where I started this campaign and to just create awareness on sickle cell. I mobilized students one afternoon just to sit down and have a discussion on sickle cell and what is sickle cell and how is it, how can it be managed, you know? And through these conversations, you get to understand that people are not even aware, and you get to read minds of people, what they think. And you get to hear so many or funny stories, others even saying, oh, as a human being, for them, they don't want to be in a position where they want to date someone or get married to someone who has sickle cell, because it will be an expensive life, it will be a boring life, having to be in the hospital all your life. So they won't even consider dating someone with sickle cell. So those are some of the thoughts that triggered or made me to realize that it's very important to come up with these sessions where you hold conversations and get to hear what people think, and even get to educate them and help them relearn and unlearn their thoughts around sickle cell.
Were you always so courageous in sharing your story and in creating this awareness, or were there fears that you faced even before doing this, and perhaps even now while you continue?
In the beginning I was so courageous, and I was this person who would share the knowledge. I would be happy to learn from others, you know. From the beginning you don't have that courage, but then as you continue doing this, you get to learn more and you get to develop that courage and even continue to do this. You get to hold space, to be in spaces of big crowds where people are there to listen to you, you know. But then sometimes with time, as you continue interacting in your community, with your friends, with everybody around, sometimes the myths and misconceptions, how you interact with your community makes that confidence go down sometimes. But then, you know, that as humans, there are those days that we are just low in our emotions, how we feel, how we sometimes just even don't want to show up for ourselves. So there are those moments. But then I will just say, we keep on doing what is possible just to make our community aware, and we continue to be confident. This is not even for me, you know, it's for the generation behind me.
Yeah.
So those are some of the things that motivates you to continue doing what you're doing.
Oh, so good. So, so good. And with a condition as relentless as sickle cell, what personal practices perhaps and routines or treatments do help you hold your physical health and your mental health as well as your spirit together?
I could say that sickle cell is a condition that doesn't have a cure, but it's managed through medications. That those medications that you take throughout your life, you know, the long term, throughout your life, and then there are those things that you as a person needs to do just to take care of yourself. And also help manage sickle cell. Things like you have to drink a lot of water so that it helps you in your blood circulation. Because sometimes when you don't drink a lot of water and your blood gets so thick that it can't flow very well through your veins, sometimes it clots and you go through that pain because there's no enough blood flow and enough oxygen through the blood. So as people living with sickle cell are just required to take enough water, take fruits, take a lot of vegetables, and also stay away from a lot of heat, stay away from places with so much cold, because so much cold will mean that, because when it's so much cold, the blood tends to clot, and this clot causes a lot of pain. It drives someone into crisis. When there is so much heat also, this will drive you into crisis. So there are so many do's and don'ts that when you just work through it and walk through that, you are able to just live a good life. But just by taking care of yourself and going for routine checkups to the doctor, so that you are constantly aware of what is happening in your body. With this, even for children, they can be able to live a longer life, even up to 80 years old.
Oh, wow. Yes. It sounds like a lot, but I'm glad that you're able to manage all of it well. And with the fact that you help others, countless others, how do you balance your own pain days with your service days? So when you have to show up, but you really cannot show up, have there been times when giving to others felt like too much for you? And how did you navigate that?
One thing about me, if I am able to show up, I will show up.
Yeah.
I've even showed up tired, I've showed up sick,
Jessica.
I've showed up feelings, like so many feelings with me, but as a person, I will always show up when I'm able to show up. I don't know if it's a personality thing, but for me, I tend to show up for people when they need me, even if I'm not in a good place to show up, because I tend to care so much for people around me. It's not that I forget about myself, but it seems I prioritize so much. I give priority to people around me first. So through my advocacy, I've learned to show up for those that really needs me. But there are times that I really can't show up. When that happens, I really just delegate, you know, so that whatever was supposed to happen doesn't fail to happen just because I couldn't show up. So there are days that I can't show up, maybe to events. I can't show up maybe to when I'm needed. But then as a person, I've constantly tried to show up when needed, when my help is needed in meetings. And I'm sorry to say that I'm one person who will even show up very sick and no one in the room will know.
Jessica!
I'll talk like I'm very good and I'm well.
Oh no.
And after that, I'll be bedridden. And people will be like, yo, what's up, you know? You were okay the other time. What happened? But you know, the same people didn't know that I had to show up for them at that moment. They were sick and nobody knew, but I just had to show up. So for me, I think as a person, like, pain has taught me that sometimes we don't show up because we want to, but we show up because we were once in that place where we needed someone to show up for us. That is all we needed, you know, just someone to be there, just someone to, you didn't even want to talk. You just needed someone to be there, sit with you. So it has made me learn that all I can do is show up for people if I'm in a position to.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you able to keep a job? Because I can imagine pain. And I don't know if this is too crass to say on air, but when I'm going through that time of my cycle, I just want to be in bed because it's just too painful to do anything. And now I can just imagine constantly and consistently being in pain. Are you able to keep a job?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
All my jobs, I've kept all my jobs.
Okay.
You know, it's weird to say.
Yeah.
But I've had jobs that I've left a job for a better job. You know, it's weird to say that I've constantly had jobs because, you know, some people living with this kind of condition, they haven't been able to keep a job because of the condition. Their employers had to let them go because they are not constantly at job,
they're
at
not
work,
productive.
You know. Yes,
oh,
but being the kind of person that I am, that I've previously said, that I'll even show up at work when I'm sick and I'll be like, you know, we're going to do this.
Mm.
And I'm very sick and I'll work my ass and go back home.
Mm.
But I'll only say I won't show up at work when now it's like, it's very bad, you know, like now it's very, very bad. But I've been able to keep all my jobs. And I'm happy to say that even in a situation where most of the people haven't been able to have jobs or keep their jobs, I'm happy to say that I've been able to keep my jobs. And it's weird that sometimes it's my boss that tells me, you know, it's time to go home.
Yeah.
I'm at work, I'm not feeling very well and nobody knows. But then when I do something and someone sees, oh, you are straining, are you okay? And someone will just tell you, go home and rest. But for you, you feel, no, I haven't reached my limit where it's that bad. I still have that strength to do this. So for me, I'm really a workaholic because I think work make me be in a space where I feel very sane. Because if I'm not at work, I have so many things going around. I think of so many things, you know. So I feel that having a job has kept me on my feet, has made me remain sane. Because sometimes having no job puts you in a place where you can, it's even mentally, you are not okay.
Yes.
So I think it's having a job has grounded me somehow. Yeah.
Oh man. And I think that's why you're the perfect person to be raising this awareness and to be doing this work, because clearly you are a unicorn. And you know, I'm going to say this. Awareness campaigns are powerful, but what we found is that sometimes they are short-lived. What does it take to translate awareness of sickle cell into durable change? And I'm talking in policy, in community, in healthcare access. How are you able to sustain the awareness and translate it into real action?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because nothing is as hard as staying grounded even without funds. You know, sometimes so many people out here assume that when you are into advocacy and creating awareness on a specific thing or just talking about a specific topic or holding conversation with the community about a topic, a specific thing, that you have all the funds to do this. But man, let me say, sometimes it's very hard because you are going to do it whether you have the money or not, because people really don't know whether you have it or you don't. But then people are still out here who are really craving for that education. People are still out here who are not aware, and our community continues to discriminate, to stigmatize those people living with sickle cell. So in the moment that we stop the advocacy, then we tend to the rate of people, maybe personally I fear that the rate of children being born with sickle cell will rise, because people are not going to test for their genotypes, you know. Children are not being screened, and people don't have this education. But then the moment we continue doing this, then people continue to learn.
Yes.
Like even in churches don't get closed when the pastor is sick, you know. It will continue, the church will go on with or without the pastor. So for us, it hasn't been an easy journey. Most of the times we don't even have funds. But then for the sake of our community, we really want to keep this going. Even if it's just using social media, it's just posting those messages for people to continue being aware. We have constantly done that, but it hasn't been easy. Like for our annual events that are just, we have this annual event that we do, it's dubbed Coffee for Champion, where we bring the community together, stakeholders and even partners, just to create awareness on sickle cell, advocate, and also to fundraise for underprivileged children living with sickle cell from the informal settlement areas of Kisumu. This is an event that is not even funded by anyone.
Sure.
So you have to really talk to people, to really encourage them just to buy a ticket, just to buy a ticket to support a child to buy their medication maybe for 3 months, you know. And it's really hard. Someone might think that this is an event that you do annually, yearly. It could be funded, you know, but then at that point there's no funds for that event. It's an event that is just it's like a charity event. So doing this hasn't been easy, but what keeps us going is that the feedback that we get from people, the feeling that someone calls you and that a mother has to say, thank you so much for just giving me these drugs for my child for 3 months, you know, it's really a great feeling. The feeling when someone says, you know, thank you for inviting me to your event, because now I know how important it is to test for genotype. It's those kind of comments or those kind of things that make us to say, you know, this is important and we can't stop now. and we can't give up now.
Yeah.
So those are the things that give us the motivation to keep on going,
sure.
even without the fans.
Yeah. You know, I'm so glad you touched on the medication, right? Because in many places, access to care or pain meds or nutritious support for people with sickle cell is very limited. So what are some structural gaps you see repeatedly? And what action steps can communities and perhaps even our government or individuals take to bridge those gaps?
So we have so many gaps, but what I will say is that when we are able to give access to medication, because what I think is that, or what I feel is that sometimes it's not that people don't want to take medication, it's that they can't afford
they
them,
can't
you know,
afford it.
Because as a mother living in the informal settlement areas who has 3 kids with sickle cell, and every month she has to depart with 3,000 Kenyan shillings to buy medication for one child. And this mother has to pay rent. This mother has to pay school fees, and they live in the informal settlement areas. You know, those are areas where people are very poor. You know, they live below the dollar level, you see. So how do you expect someone to part with like 9,000 or 10,000 Kenyan shillings per month to buy drugs for her 3 children, yet she hasn't paid school fees for them? She hasn't bought books or even food for them. And, you know, they can't even afford a three-day meal, you know, a balanced diet. So this is where, when I look at it, I say it's very important for our government to consider giving, like, free drugs or even affordable drugs to these people, because some of them cannot be able to afford.
Yeah.
And also it's the same with, like, medical attention. These people really need frequent medical attention, but then some of them cannot afford them because they're not financially stable, you know. So if you can give access to affordable medical services, this will be very great.
Yeah.
We need policies that that give a specific amount of money to these people, where they can say when they go to hospital, when they go for checkups, they don't need to use out-of-pocket money just to make sure they have the medicine and they see that a doctor. There are small insurance that they pay a year is able to cater for their medication and them getting to see a doctor and even being treated if need be. But then we are not yet there. We still have a long way to go. But then through our advocacy, there's so much that have also been achieved. For example, where I come from, we have constantly advocated. And now we have red cells exchange machine where your blood you can get a red cell exchange, like it's kind of like a blood transfusion where the sickled blood is removed and blood that has cells that are not sickled is replaced, you know, so that you are able to live at least some months, like 6 to 7 months, without having pain, without being into crisis, because you have like a clean blood that is not sickled, you know. Those are the progress that we are happy to say we have seen. But then I feel we are not still there. We're not still in a place where these drugs, someone can go to the hospital end of the month and pick their drugs, you know, kind of way. Like I am looking forward to a country where we are in a place where the same way those patients with HIV/AIDS go and access free drugs and care, the same way sickle cell patients are able to go to the hospital and access free drugs and care.
Sure. And I do want to, and I don't know if this will be too sensitive, or perhaps maybe there should be a trigger warning for those who are sensitive. Do you struggle with the idea of living? Do you question whether or not life is worth living when you are carrying pain and you are, when it just becomes too much? Have you ever struggled with suicide ideation or anything of that kind that really you've reached the peak of what pain and emotional turmoil and all of those things can be?
Yeah, sure. That's a very good question. What I know, no matter how great you are, there's something that you will constantly be struggling with. We have tried so hard to create advocacy around sickle cell. But then one thing that I feel that we haven't done as a nation or as a people is that we haven't looked deeply at the mental well-being of people living with chronic illnesses. Because one thing I know as a person, that living with chronic illness is like battling suicide every day. Every day you are like, should I continue living or should I just say this is, I'm done, we are done, you know. It's but now you as a person, because of the exposure you've had, because of the interaction you had, because you are the person who talks to people, you are the person who those mothers with young children, you get to have those conversations with them. You get to tell them, you know, with good care for your child, they can live and grow and work hard just as I am, you know. But then going back home and just being there and coming to think about it, you're like, you know, even if I have to do this every day, it's worth it for those people. But then sometimes you feel mentally drained. Just as a normal human being, you feel like, is it worth it having to take this pain every day, having to live this life every day, you know?
Yeah.
Is it really worth it? I'm sorry to say that so many people living with chronic illnesses, not even sickle cell disease, really struggle with suicide. You know, if not every day, but at least once in a week, someone had to make a decision that I don't have to take my life. You know, there's a time I was in a forum and I was talking to young women about suicide. And one thing people don't understand, that having the thoughts of suicide, it's not about anyone around you. It's not about what people did. It's not about what people said.
Yeah.
It's about yourself. It's the pain you feel. It's the pain that drives you to say that, you know, it's now I can't do this anymore. It's not, you really love people around you. You really love them so deeply, your siblings, your friends, your parents. But then what you feel, it's not about them, it's about yourself. So when I constantly talk about with women, with girls, with my community, I really try to also bring in the perspective of mental health. But just to answer your question, is that this is one thing that is a struggle, but then we try to live one day at a time.
Because that's all you have. That is literally all you have.
Yeah.
When you share your story, which part of it do you hope people understand most deeply? And perhaps they don't at times when you do share. What do you want people to remember and not just admire?
I've been in so many spaces. I've talked in so many spaces. I've held conversation with so many people and dignitaries, and I can remember I was also a speaker at an East African Blood Disorders Forum last year. And for me, one thing that I want to remember, or I want people to remember, that when we create awareness around sickle cell, when we talk about sickle cell, this is not for us. It's not for the person. You know, sometimes somebody might say you are creating awareness because you are living with the disease, or your parent has the disease, or your sibling, or your child. But then people forget that we still have a generation that is coming. We still have a generation that is growing up. And when we are not keen enough, or if we are not careful enough, this will be the country will be a disaster, because we will have so many people living with sickle cell, and people won't be able to get married because there are so many of us who are carriers, you know. So I'm constantly trying that we raise a generation where people are aware. And I always say, this is not for me. It's for your children and their children. I want to leave a legacy where people will look back. And this is me. I don't get to benefit, but I want someone growing up knowing that this is what is happening and how this is how we should deal with it. I want a community where there's no discrimination and stigmatization of people living with sickle cell.
Yeah.
Because one thing that I can tell you, the discrimination and the stigma is still bad. And when you talk about suicide, let me tell you, those are one of the things that drives people into suicide, you know? Because just as human beings, we always want that space where we are accepted, where we are acknowledged, where we are loved, you know? But then when you constantly have met rejection and people just talking bad about who you are, a person you didn't choose to be, who you are, but a person you didn't choose to be, and there's nothing you can do about it.
There's nothing you can do.
It's one thing that drives you to your grave. So I just need a community where we love each other, because we already understand this condition, where we are able to motivate each other to continue living, you know, where we are able to share our pain freely, and where we are able to get care and support.
And, you know, I hadn't really thought about romantic relationships. Those must be really, really tough to navigate as well.
So tough. Very tough.
And you know what's sad about it is that the whole point of love, really, especially that kind of love and what it needs to represent, is that it's supposed to be a selfless display of somebody being prioritized above you, or you prioritizing somebody above yourself. But people have gotten so selfish. They've thought about themselves so much that the idea of serving someone, even if it means serving them until their last breath or to the grave, is just unfathomable, when that is the point, really. I've lost you there, Jessica. Oh no, it seems we've lost Jessica. Oh man. It seems we've lost Jessica, so I will just end the conversation right here.
Sorry, I lost you.
Okay, all right. I'm so sorry. We had lost you. We didn't hear anything that you said in response.
Sorry, just can I have the question again?
Oh, no. So I was saying it wasn't necessarily a question, more than it was a reflection on just how, when the whole point of that kind of love is service and to serve someone even to the point of their grave, these days it's so transactional, it is so selfish. People don't want to do the very object of love. And so even though that is the case, I think it still hurts to be in a position where you expect love and you would give love, you can give love, but it's not coming because of something you can't do.
Yeah, that's the painful part of it, because generally as humans, we all want to be in a place where we are loved and we are able to love, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But then one thing you can't do is force people or force someone to love you because of something that you have, you don't have control over, you know.
Mm.
So these are some of the challenges that people or people living with sickle cell face, you know. When I get to hear stories from young ladies, young women out here, you get to hear from them, from their frustrations, what they have undergone, because they just wanted to be loved, you know. It's something very simple that people might take for granted, but then if you are in a position of someone living with chronic illness, it feels different, you know. Someone will tell you it's not important, you know, you will be okay. But then if you have to sit back alone and try to reflect, you get to think that what's the point? Like, if you are able to love someone, if you're able to treat them right, but then when it comes to you, you don't get to get back that same kind of love just because of a condition. It's something that it's not very easy to say or to talk about, but it's also something that our community really needs to improve about, because this is living with a chronic illness is not a death sentence.
Yes.
It's something that is manageable. There are people, I could say that people who have been lucky to have people in their lives who really accepted them the way they are, and loved and truly loved them for who they were and who they are. So if we had so many people like that in our community, then it will be a better place.
Yeah.
Because love is not just a word, but love is a verb.
Yes, yes.
It's the doing, yeah.
Oh, Jessica, thank you so much. Thank you for carrying what so many people carry in silence. You've unmasked pain, and what you're offering back is power. For being the voice that says, you're not alone, man. Your struggle isn't wasted. Your life has purpose, even in the throes of it. We are really, really grateful for you. And we know it's challenging. The funds don't come readily. Perhaps you're fighting against people who don't see the depth and the seriousness of what you're experiencing. There's rejection. There is the consistent struggle of your mental health and choosing to be alive, even when that choice is literally hurting you. You are one strong woman. You've held your weight and you still chose to help others carry theirs as well. And yeah, man, this is radical generosity on another level. And I'm so glad to have had this conversation with you and to live in the same era and generation as you. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'll just want to say that what has also kept us grounded is faith. Sometimes our faith falters, but then we get to remember that God still loves us, you know. God still really loves us. And for me, it's faith, it's believing in Christ, you know. Sometimes our faith also falters. You blame God for so many things. But then you still come back and say, you know, God, without you, I couldn't be this far. And I still believe you have plans for me. And because he promises that he have good plans for us. So we constantly stay at his feet because we believe that with him, everything is possible, hoping that he will hold our hands through this journey.
Oh, yeah. Man. And what a journey it is. Sure.
Sure.
I hope you well. I wish you well. And I hope that your faith sustains you even in the darkest of days. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. I really appreciate
it. It was only a pleasure. Cheers.
Cheers.
And with that, I am Nompumelelo Mbonani, and I hope you've just made sense of your own struggle. Or if you haven't made sense of it completely, you are choosing and deciding to hold on. Because it won't be long. And if it is long here, when you do finally rest, we will meet our Savior soon and very soon. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.